Hey everyone, Tim Robertson here, the publisher and creator of MyMac.com. Maybe one of these days I'll actually go into the history of MyMac.com on the podcast. I've actually had a few requests for that. You know, when you've been publishing for 11 years, a lot of people seem to have questions, and one of these days I'll get around to answering some of the questions about the history of MyMac.com and that sort of thing. But for today, we've got a pretty full show for you guys. We're going to kick it off with a speedy review from Robert Hazelrig.
Robert Hazelrig here with another Speed E review just for you. Today I'd like to talk to you about three different speaker sets that you can use with your iPod. And they come in three different price ranges, so I think I got a speaker system here for everyone. The first one I'd like to talk to you about is the iWoofer. It comes to us by Rain Design. The first thing you'll notice about the iWoofer is its unique style. It is very interesting. It's about a 4-inch sphere with two titanium drivers in the front of the unit, and it has an opening in the front which almost makes it look like a mouth with two eyes. It also has a subwoofer on the bottom that gives it a pretty good bass response that's certainly more than adequate for personal desktop use. It sells for about $100, and it's cute. It's got some cool blue colored lights on the bottom. The interface for the controls is on the side, which at first was a little awkward, but I got used to it right away. It also doubles as a dock. It comes with its own USB cable and a built-in FM tuner. One thing I can tell you for sure about this unit is it does turn a couple of heads. I did have a number of people comment on it while it was sitting on my desk, and I will tell you that the chicks dig it. Okay, next up, the Banshee speaker system. They claim it's a 5.0 surround sound system. I don't know if there is such a thing as 5.0. I thought it all started with 5.1. Anyway, it's not really true surround sound, but the sound quality you get from these speakers is pretty good for personal desktop speakers. It is lacking a bass and treble control, which the Rain Design iWoofer did offer, and it doesn't come with a dock connector, so you do have to adjust your volume on your iPod before playing your audio on the Banshee. In order to get really good sound from the unit, you really do have to position your head a certain way in front of the speaker. So the speakers don't really fill the room with full quality sound. But again, this is a personal desktop use type of speaker. I give it a rating of 3 out of 5. Okay, I saved the best for last. The iThunder from MTX. This is a boombox that sells for $200, and it just knocked my socks off. I really loved its power. I've been taking it to the beach this summer. I've been using it out in the backyard at the barbecues, and everybody is very impressed with the sound quality that comes off of it. It comes with a remote control that lets you adjust the volume and skip tracks if you need to. It also has an AC power cord, and if you are taking it to the beach, you'll need 8 C-size batteries. It has a dock connector on the top, and it comes with a variety of different sleeves that'll let you snap in any dock connecting iPod. So do I like it? Of course I do. The iThunder really lives up to its name. So, just to recap, the iWoofer from Rain Design Inc. is cute and chicks dig it. The Banshee Surround Sound 5.0 audio speaker system, 3 out of 5, could have been a little stronger. And the iThunder, which lives up to its name, it's a very impressive portable boombox for your iPod, which I really liked. This has been Robert Hazelrig with a speedy review, and thanks for listening.
Hello, this is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Today's tip is a pretty simple one, but it's something that I hope you'll find useful if you're ever stuck in an office and you need to print a document in a hurry. Most office printers and photocopiers you come across nowadays are plugged into a network. This makes a lot of sense because it allows the printer or copier to be shared among a group of people in an office. But if you're in that office and you want to print to it, how can you do that from your Mac? Unless you're somewhere where there's an Apple server in place, the printer will often be shared out using a Windows server. Now you can try and set this up using Windows sharing on your Mac, but that can be a very hit and miss affair, depending on the type of printer you're trying to connect to. The issue is that Windows servers, when they get a Windows machine connected to them looking for a printer, expect to download the driver directly to the Windows machine. Obviously you can't do that with Mac OS X, and this is what causes a lot of problems, and you can get a situation where the Windows server just decides that nothing coming from you is valid and therefore it won't print it. My recommendation is to keep away from Windows sharing and use an alternate route to try and connect to the printer. The thing is, if it's on the network, it normally has an IP address, and if it has an IP address, then you can normally print directly to it without having to go through the Windows server. First thing to do is to go to the panel of the printer or photocopier and see if you can get into a test menu. From the test menu, you can normally print a test page. The test page will often have the network configuration of the printer or photocopier printed directly on it. This you can use to set your Mac up. If the test page doesn't give you that, for instance, some colour printers will just give you a nice pretty colour picture, then have a browse through the menus on the printer itself and see if you can actually see the IP address on the little LCD display. If worst comes to the worst, just ask somebody, they may well know what the IP address is, or sometimes in more organised offices you can find it printed on a label on the side of the printer. Once you have the IP address, then you're most of the way there. Bring up System Preferences in OS X and go to the Printer and Fax icon. Click the plus sign and you'll bring up a new dialog, the printer browser, in the printer setup utility. Now the protocol you want is going to depend on the type of printer you're trying to print to. If it's an HP printer, then first try the HP JetDirect socket protocol. Otherwise you're going to want the Line Printer Daemon protocol, LPD. Enter the IP address that you got from the printer a few moments ago into the address field. Don't bother leaving anything for the queue. Give it a helpful name and location, because this is how you're going to see the printer in the printer list. And then select an appropriate driver for the printer in the Print Using selection tool. Again, if you're printing to an HP printer and you can't find the exact model on the list, then you can try just using the HP LaserJet 4 driver, because that's reasonably generic. If you want to use colour or any other special features, then what you might want to do is search the manufacturer's website for an appropriate driver suitable for OS X. Once you've got the driver sorted, click the Add button, and the printer should then appear in your printer list. What's going to happen now is when you want to print to this printer, the job will be imaged on your computer and then sent directly over the network to the printer, where, using the appropriate protocol, it will receive the job, install it internally, and then hopefully print it. The key thing is to experiment. Sometimes you can have the odd issues with drivers and that sort of thing, so have a play around, see how you get on. If you're really having no luck, there is one route available to people who've got Intel Macs. You can, of course, load up Parallels or boot into Boot Camp, and then install the appropriate network Windows driver by connecting to the printer share. As I said before, normally what will happen when you try and do that is when you connect to the share, the Windows will install the driver for you directly off the server. That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
If you listen to last week's show, you probably remember John Nemirovsky, and Nemo, as we like to call him here at MyMac.com, had an interview with Artie. Artie is a recent Windows switcher. In other words, he was a diehard PC user, went into the Apple Store, and walked out with some new swag. This week we're going to continue and finish up the interview with Artie, and, you know, Artie's actually going to be a writer at MyMac.com, and John kind of hints about that here in the interview. And so give it a listen. I think it's pretty interesting. Hope you do too.
Well, once again, I'd like to thank Artie for being a guest writer as a Windows user at Macworld, and I bet this year at Macworld you'll have your own column, and maybe we can even get you to be on our MyMac.com staff, because Tim Robertson, our publisher, did invite you to become a writer. Are you listening, Tim? Are you out there listening? Anyway, Artie, thank you so much, and how would you rate the overall Apple Store experience at Stonestown, and what are your expectations of being a new Mac user?
The experience I would rate is a 10. I'm not kidding. It was really good. Anybody who walks in the store is going to be very, very happy and very pleased. Whether you buy something or not, that's up to you. But the guys are great. What I'm expecting from my experience with using this thing is as I become more and more familiar with the machine and learn how to use it, it's going to be fantastic. I get to use the Wi-Fi's built right in, so I can, if I'm in my home, I have that all connected up. I can sit anywhere in my living room or downstairs in my den and just flip open my Mac and start working on pictures, or I can get on the internet, check my email. If I'm at the airport and traveling somewhere, I can flip open my Mac. I got Wi-Fi. The Air Force got Wi-Fi. I mean, it's just going to be fantastic, and I expect that just like I did with Windows, and Windows is, you know, it's good stuff. Just like I did with Windows, I learned how to use it. It's become a big part of my life. I expect that Mac is also going to become a big part of my life in a slightly different way, and is going to take me a little bit different of an area, and it's going to expand my experience as a computer user. And that's it.
Thank you very much, Artie. Thanks for becoming a Mac user.
You're welcome.
And we look forward to hearing from you, reading your terrific columns, and seeing your pictures. And most important, we want to welcome you to the Mac community. We want to thank our listeners yet again for joining us on the MyMac.com podcast for our reviews you can use that won't make you snooze. Artie and Nemo, signing off.
I want to apologize for the hum that you guys hear whenever you hear my voice in the mini podcast. I don't know what it is. There's something is humming. I don't think it's the microphone. It's not picking up the G5. That's on the floor on carpeting, so I know that's not... That can't possibly be it, but it's something in here. I'm just not quite sure what it is. Here's an idea that Chad Perry and I were batting around on the, while we were recording the podcast, some of our downtimes from last week on My Mac Podcast number 92, and that's to actually start a third podcast. Yeah, it's like MyMac.com is going to become a podcast home for Mac podcasts or something. But really what it is, it's breaking out the interview segments that Chad and I are doing on the main podcast. Something like you just heard with John and Artie. Chad and I do a lot of interviews. The problem is sometimes these interviews run a half hour to 45 minutes, simply because they're really good and we're having a good time and the person we're talking to is very interesting. And with, you know, maybe an exception of one or two people, and I'm not going to mention who, the interviews have always gone really great. They all sound great, but some of the people, well, all the people that we talked to, I would say probably with the exception of one, has been fantastic to interview. One person was kind of a dick, to be honest. Once it actually started up and the interview started, and for what you, the audience, would hear, it sounded great. The guy sounded interesting, but he was a dick in before and after. In fact, there was no after. Usually when we do an interview, Chad and I will wrap up the interview, but we'll continue to talk to the person for a little bit. This one particular person was just a jerk. But that notwithstanding, we thought it would be fun to do more interviews, obviously, but to break them away from the main MyMac.com podcast and call it the MyMac interview, not the MyMac.com podcast interview, just the MyMac interview. Russ Walkowicz has been doing interviews at MyMac.com. Geez, going back to, I don't know, Russ, what, 95, 96? I mean, in fact, just last week, MyMac Podcast 91, we did an interview with Guy Kawasaki, and Chad Perry actually mentioned that this was actually our second interview. The first one was done by Russ Walkowicz back in 96. So that's how long we've been doing interviews with Mac dignitaries. We want to continue that trend, but instead of trying to fit it within the format of the MyMac.com podcast, what if we broke it out and had it its own podcast, whether it's an interview that goes 15 minutes or an hour? I think it would do the subjects more justice doing it that way. I am curious on what you guys think. Would a third podcast just be way too much? Of course, breaking out the interview, you would assume that it would make the MyMac.com podcast shorter. Well, that really wasn't even the issue on the last show. I mean, we were supposed to do an interview with Julian Miller on that show. It didn't work out. He had a power outage. We did the entire show, wrapped it up, and right at the end of the recording that podcast, we saw Julian pop up online. So we actually did do the interview that night, and we saved it for this show. And we'll play that in a second, and then we'll wrap up this mini podcast with Guy Searle and the Dashboard Minute. So that's the idea. Chad and I are thinking about doing more of an actor's studio type of interview where we get a little bit more in-depth with the people. We're not so interested in reviewing people to pimp their latest and greatest hardware or software, although obviously we give them a chance to do that. We're more interested in interviewing people and getting to who they are. What makes them a Mac user? Why did this person decide to write a shareware program for the Mac? Finding out who they are. What was the first Mac they bought? Why did they buy it? Was it something in their childhood that, you know, that was drawn to electronics? Maybe it was an Atari 2600 was their first game system and they just kind of started there. Maybe they had an old Tandy computer and they just started programming with it and just fell in love with the idea. Or maybe they started late in life, kind of like me. Well, I've always been attracted to electronics, Atari 2600. I had one of those little handheld video games. I remember my mother and father. Geez, I can't even tell you how old I was. It was post Atari 2600 days, but it was pre-boombox days. So I know that doesn't mean anything to you, but at least it puts it in perspective in a time frame for myself. They went to they get this invitation in the mail saying, "Come out. We're going to show you, family vacation homes that they could buy or timeshare or something." And it was an all-day event. But if they went to it, they got one of three prizes. They got a color television, a 19-inch color television, a computer system, and there was something else in there, a microwave oven. And this was at the time where not very many people had microwave ovens, so that would have been cool. They ended up getting the computer. They didn't get a choice. That's just what they drew. So they got the computer after spending all day at this event that they had absolutely no intention of ever buying into. So they brought this computer home and gave it to me. I can't tell you what it is. But I remember it was just a keyboard, and you had to hook it up to a television. And kind of like an Apple II, but that's not what it was, I'm sure. Although, it really could have been. I think it was some cheap thing, I guess, that whatever company was sponsoring this, they got it at Radio Shack real cheap or something. So they bring this computer home, and it had a slot in it, kind of like you would put a cartridge in. And so I got the bright idea to tear apart some of my Atari 2600 cartridges and put them in this slot and basically see what would happen. I knew it wouldn't play games, but I kind of wanted to see, and it just made some really odd colors on the television. I was probably frying the computer for all I know. I don't know. But it was fun, and it kind of sparked my curiosity. That made me take some electronic classes in high school, which I was horrible at, mostly because the teacher was so boring that he didn't grasp he didn't get my attention. And as a student, I needed a teacher to really capture my attention. And otherwise, I just probably wouldn't do very good in that school or in that class. My writing teacher, Miss Whitehead, Whitehall, Whitehat, Whitehead. I don't know, so I think it was Whitehead, really grabbed my attention, and that's kind of why I started MyMac.com, because I got the writing bug really from her. So, going back to the interview segment, that's kind of how I got into computers initially, but what made someone like Julian get into computers that we're going to play the interview here in a minute? And we do get into that, but it comes later in the interview. In the beginning of the interview, we talk more about, you know, the different programs he has, the software company, that sort of thing. But I'm more interested, and I think a lot of you would be too, and I could be mistaken if I am, send me an email at tim@mymac.com, but I'm more interested in finding out more about the people who make up the Macintosh platform. I think that is much more interesting than just, you know, here. There's a lot of Mac podcasts, and quite a few of them do interviews, and it's always the same thing. It's a PR person from that company, or it's the software designer himself, and all they do is sit there and talk about the latest and greatest version of the software, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's needed. But there's a huge market that nobody else seems to be going for, and that's learning more about the people. And I think that's what Chad and I are looking to do with a third podcast, the My Mac Interview. And I don't know, I'd really like to hear your feedback on that. There's just so many interesting people out there, interesting backgrounds. And for companies, you know, like a small software developer, I think having an interview out there that focuses more on the people rather than the products, and like I said, we'll cover the products too, but that focuses on the people is going to make you, the potential buyer, more comfortable, more loyal. You're going to want to buy products from that company simply because you know who the people are behind it. So that's the idea. Love it if you sent some feedback in. Send it to tim@mymac.com. So here's the interview that we did with Julian last Wednesday. So you guys are hearing it, you know, 5, 6, 7 days after we recorded it. It's about almost a half hour. And like I said, after that, we'll play the dashboard minute number 45. This is the 45th dashboard minute. And it's amazing that guy's taken it this far with such humble beginnings. And if you've read up at mymac.com, you'll know what Guy's doing next. And if you're curious, go up to the website, go on the feature site, and check out Dashboard Minute on Life Support. Not from a lack of talent on Guy's part, but he's going to move up to what we both consider bigger and better things. He's basically taking over Not Mac News, which was Chris Siebold's spot on the show for, geez, eight months or so. Chris did a lot of Dashboard Minute, or I'm sorry, a lot of Not Mac News. So that's what Guy's going to be doing. Let's jump into the interview, and then we'll hear back from Guy Searle, and we're out. Well, hi, Chad. We're here on the My Mac Mini podcast.
Yeah, our egos are too big to hold in one podcast.
That's right. We couldn't let the guys over here have all the fun, so we have to invade.
Yeah. But fortunately, we were able to slip off to the Pacific Rim to pick up another pirate with us, and we are here with Julian Miller of Script Software. Hello, Julian.
Hi. It's good to be with you.
It's great to have you. Of course, if anybody listens to the My Mac podcast number 92 that came out last Thursday, you'll know that we had a scheduled interview with Julian. It didn't work out because of a power outage in Hawaii. So what's going on with that power outage?
Power's back on again, thank goodness. It's interesting. When it occurred, I realized that the interview was completely blacked out because, you know, Skype and VoIP and iChat and everything depends on the computer, which depends on power.
And so, with no power, yeah, you're kind of SOL.
Yeah, as I said to you all before, we may be dependent on oil, but we're much more dependent on electricity.
Yeah, we're spoiled, that's for sure. So was it an island-wide blackout, or is it just in your area?
It seems that it was rolling around the island in some way, and I don't know. I'll find out later because the people downstairs, one of the people is a lineman, and he's usually filled with information about electricity on the island and the goings-on in that area.
So you are a software developer living in Hawaii. How great is your job?
You know, it's interesting. It just sort of happened. Somebody kept after me, a husband and wife out here. They kept after me and said, hey, you know, you should come out here and live. And I couldn't imagine it myself. But 8 years ago, after listening to them tell me this for months, I finally decided to come out for couple weeks, and I've been here ever since.
Really? So where did you come from?
I lived in Tahoe prior to that, up in Crystal Bay. Well,
from Tahoe to Hawaii.
It's interesting.
You do know how to trade up, don't you?
He's from the streets, the gritty streets of Tahoe.
Hey, I've been around. I've spent my time in Washington, D.C. and other places. I've lived a lot of places, and everywhere I've lived, I've always thought, you know, this is a great place. I'll probably live here for the rest of my life, and it just hasn't worked out that way. I've lived in a lot of places.
Well, you're fortunate. Well, I've never even been to Hawaii, and I'd love to go there and visit someday, and I don't know, to be able to write software and live in Hawaii at the same time, and making great software, I may add, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Actually, the reality is that I do a lot of organizing, and a lot of the people who write, who are working with script software, like Philippe Huppé, he does iKey, and he lives in France. Wow. And Mark Fleming, he works at Queen's University, and he lives up around Toronto in Canada. And so, Sam Rollins lives in Australia, and Frank Lemke lives in Germany, and it goes on. The list goes on and on and on. And if I can mention this, it's just an interesting fact of life these days. It's just like Skype is used for international communications. There are these virtual companies that consists of individuals all over the globe.
Well, we can relate to that. We've got writers at mymac.com from Australia, Germany, the UK,
Saudi Arabia.
I mean,
that's great.
So we can. It's a global community, and it's fantastic to be able to work with people from all over the globe that we wouldn't have been able to just simply mm-hmm. 5 years ago, really. So,
and there's a good side to that too, because, like, we can go on about Macs and software and all that sort of thing, and we think it's a really big deal. But in the light of events going on in the Middle East, it kind of shrivels, you might say, a little bit in comparison. But we are having a good impact, and that is that international relations, whatever type they are, they're going to allow us to have better communication and understanding of other countries. Yes. And in this age, that's a good thing.
Well, I think that the internet and communicating like we are right now, obviously, is really an outgrowth of the technology that we're using every day. But to be able to collaborate with people who may not only live far away from you, but have a different religion, a different way of life, the technology is out there that someone from Israel, for instance, mm-hmm. could be working hand-in-hand with someone in
Hawaii,
or Lebanon. Yeah. I mean, you know, someone exactly. that we think of as completely their enemies, they really have probably more in common than they have differences.
Right.
Yeah, and the thing is, just like we work, we're all into tech stuff, and of course, it's entertaining and interesting for us to focus in this area. But it may be that a little emotional technology or intellectual technology be able to be a little more tolerant and appreciative of these other cultures and what they're going through at this time. I mean, we saw what New York went through during 9/11. And, I mean, all these things sort of bring it home. These people are living with that kind of situation that's been going on for years. And it would be, you know, sometimes it's hard to find solutions. In technology, it's a very satisfying thing when you're working with bits. There always seems to be a solution of some sort. If you work for it, you can figure it out. But some of these issues have been going on for thousands of years, and it has yet to be figured out. But it's good to know that there are a lot of people in Silicon Valley and elsewhere that are working on these things and attempting to solve issues like this.
Beyond that, I would say that because of the global community we have in communications now, that I'll give you a prime example. Mazen El-Angari, he is one of our writers at mymac.com, is from Saudi Arabia. For a full-time job, he writes for a travel magazine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was just in Beirut just a few months ago. Just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so when the latest violence in the Middle East happened, I sent him an email and I said, well, I'm real glad you're not in Beirut right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought about it afterwards and I thought, you know, 10 years ago, would I have known anybody in Saudi Arabia, let alone someone who may or may not be going to Beirut, mm-hmm. and would I know them to the extent that, gosh, I hope they're not there because I really don't want that person to get hurt.
Right.
So the technology is not only allowing us to communicate that, more quickly,
that,
but...
That nails it right on the head right there. The world community, it's become a very small place. We're all connected, and that's what some of the software does. In fact, if as a segue here into the smaller realm of software, one of our products is called iClock. And have either of you seen it?
No, I haven't. I'm sorry to say.
That's okay. It's kind of a small thing. You think, oh, a clock, you know. And I hear a lot of people say, oh, why do I need a clock? Why do I need another clock on my Mac? And
let me guess. So you can see different time zones, for one.
Exactly. And what it does is it replaces the clock in OS X, which is a very simple one. You know, Apple makes kind of Model Ts sometimes, and they expect other developers to come ahead and improve on the idea. So it put the Apple clock, put the time up there, and that was very nice. But we noticed that every time you wanted to see the date, you had to go up there and click on it, and it would drop down and show you the date. So being developers, we thought, well, why not show the time and the date at once up there in the menu bar? Why not show them in different formats? Why not show it in different fonts? Why not show all sorts of different information up there? And then why not make it so when you click on it and it drops down, you can see Beirut and you can see Tokyo and you can see what the time is in South Africa or South Dakota or wherever. And that's a very handy thing.
Well, we're looking at the demonstration on the website right now, scriptsoftware.com/iClock, and it looks interesting. It looks like something that I would actually enjoy having.
Yeah, it's we think of it as essential software because anybody who tries iClock tends to keep it. It's such a large improvement over the regular OS X clock. People think they don't need a clock. They try it. They realize there is a lot more to time functions on the computer and things that I need on a daily basis. And so iClock fills that need. Like, for instance, another one of the things that it does is you click on it and there are alarms. So you can say, tell me when 20 minutes is up, because say you're really focused on a project and you need to meet your wife in 20 minutes or pick up your kids or something. That's a good way to do it. Instead of going into iCal and trying to figure out, you know, and set it, then you just, in one click, you can set a 20-minute alarm, 25 minutes, 30 minutes, hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. It's very, very handy to have that.
Now, and let me...
It also... Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say it also has a stopwatch, and it has floating clocks, like the sort of thing that you would see stock traders or currency traders use, that has all the major cities down at the bottom with flags. And so you can see when the market in their area is closing, or if you're a pilot, this sort of thing is extremely handy.
Julian's sitting there right now thinking, I hope the dog barks aren't getting picked up. I have a message for him. Come here. Turn up your speakers really loud. Let's see if we can get him on the show.
Yeah, I'm going to close that.
Close I do have...
The name of that dog is Puka, which means Puka. Hole. It means hole in Hawaiian.
Let me ask you about script software. I've got a question. I was looking at it, and it looks less like a company and more like a collection of software developers working under an umbrella. So is that the case, or is it a company that has developers all over the world?
It is a company that has developers working under an umbrella all over the world.
So the answer was yes.
Yes, it is a company, and it is a collective of developers, and all the products are under Script Software, so... That is what we do. To explain how it works, we started off with copy-paste. And I'll explain what copy-paste is in a second, but that was over 10 years ago. And what we found is that so many people loved copy-paste that when we came out with iClock, a lot of the people who had copy-paste were just so enthusiastic about copy-paste that they just immediately got iClock. So it helps to have everything in one place like that, or to be able to make, you know, if you make something that people really like, then they kind of are probably going to like the next product you make because it has the same kind of philosophy and support behind it.
That's great. It's I think a lot more companies are going to be run that way in the future. And that kind of goes back to what we were saying before, that the global community is allowing this to happen with the new technologies that we have in place.
Yeah, and it helps. It definitely helps for somebody in France to have somebody on the ground in the United States.
Sure,
or
absolutely.
Almost in the ground of the United States.
Well, on U.S. ground anyways.
That's right.
Yeah, or at least in a different time zone than they're in, which is like 180 degrees the other side of the Earth.
I think we got in touch originally. I got a PR from you for your new ChatFX software, and I read the description. I checked it on the website, and I thought, hey, he'd make a pretty cool interview, and that's how we pretty much got in contact the first time. What is ChatFX, and can you explain it? It's easier to see than to hear about, obviously, and we both watched the MacNN video podcast with you, which was simply fun to watch. That was great. Yeah. But can you explain to our listeners what ChatFX does and why they definitely want to get a copy?
Okay. It's very visual. And so, you know, there's so much hype in our industry that really what people need to do is they need to see it. And so I'd recommend at this point they go to scriptsoftware.com, S-C-R-I-P-T, and then software, all one word, .com. And then there, once there, they can go to ChatFX and they can see some of these podcasts. But to describe it, it is special effects in iChat. And what that means is that what we've done is we've married a technology that Apple has called Quartz Composer with iChat. And Quartz Composer is a kind of a video processing or video programming visual language, and in Quartz Composer you can to describe it a little, you can draw in little boxes and it will make special effects. And these special effects are all sorts of things, from the distortion effects in Photo Booth, if people have seen that, to blue screen type effects that you'd see in Star Wars or any one of the movies these days. Blue screen being where the person is standing in front of a blue screen, and then the blue screen is taken out by a computer and Mars is put in as a background, for instance. So ChatFX can allow you to do that. You can have virtual sets. You can be sitting there and have Mars in the background, or you can have underwater in the background with sharks, or you can have stars, or you can be in the desert. It's all possibilities. So blue screen or green screen is one of the possibilities. Distortion effects are another possibility. We see games as another possibility, playing games through iChat. Mm-hmm. And there's something else, but I can't think what it is.
I thought that would be, it kind of reminded me of iToy for the PS2. In that you could really do something, interaction with your video and something on screen. That's kind of what it reminded me of the first time I saw it. I thought, oh, it's kind of like the iToy on the PS2, but
yeah,
it gives you the effects in iChat. I thought it's really neat software. What made you come up with doing something like that?
Nobody's ever asked that before. It just seemed like... Here's a... excuse me. One reason is that iChat, or video conferencing in general, has not taken off, and it's unfortunate. It just seems like a great thing. Everybody's been waiting for it for years, like voice recognition, but for some reason, it just hasn't happened. And it's free. You can use iChat, and the computers now come with cameras. Everything's there. People have fast internet. What's the deal? Some people do it, but a lot of people don't. I know I didn't because, for instance, I'd wake up in the morning and someone would ask me if I'd want to video conference, and you just think to yourself, oh, I'd want to do that this early. You just, you know, people wake up slow and they don't want to be seen. And then there's other reasons throughout the day that people come up with and they avoid it. I think people find it slightly intimidating. I think, for one, they don't always like to see themselves. And for another, video conferencing is slightly boring in a way. I mean, you can get across a lot. Typing back and forth in a chat room is still very popular, strangely enough. And email is a very good way to communicate. And audio is easier than typing. Video conferencing just has been a little intimidating and maybe not as fascinating or as fun as people wanted. And strangely enough, with ChatFX, we found it adds the fun into the video conferencing, and people spend hours with it now. People play with ChatFX without even video conferencing with people. They just use it in preview. I know I went to a party the other night, and there were a bunch of kids there, and some of the parents said, Julian, show the kids ChatFX. And so I went, and I was showing it to them, and we spent, after that, it was an hour and a half of them playing around with the blue screen, because I was able to show them how the Harry Potter invisibility cape works. We would show a movie, and then we'd hold up a blue sheet, and they'd be able to disappear with just their head showing in the movie. And they'd be able to be in the movie with their head or disappear entirely. And they love it. And it gives them an education about blue screen technology and how movies do what they do.
I got a question for you. It's more on the technical side. When you use this, the ChatFX, does it add anything to the overhead as far as bandwidth is concerned?
I don't think so. In terms of the bandwidth between people, it's the same amount of information that's going through. You're basically sending a series of images, right? Correct. And they're compressed and all that sort of thing. So that series of images is going through. But you might say the bandwidth on the inside of the machine is definitely larger. ChatFX puts some pretty heavy demands on the computer. We're about to release a new version that's doubled in speed, which translates into a faster frame rate, so it doesn't lag. And the frame rate makes everything look more in time, in sync. But the new Intel Macs work great. The G5 dual processors, single processors, even the G4 PowerBooks seem to work well. But definitely, you know, the further back you go, and depending on what special effect you use, there can be, it can be very demanding. Go ahead.
Who's the young lady with you in the advertisement for it on the Script Software website?
Lena, a good friend of mine.
Wow, she you got to give her some credit to allow her head to be, you know, dual head and her face to be blown up that way in advertising of your product.
I was impressed too. Yeah, you know, again, that's one of the things that people find. I mean, she may be more easygoing about stuff like that, but it's really interesting to watch how I've used ChatFX with a lot of people, and they start off, I don't like video conferencing. And then they start to use it, and after a while, they don't mind video conferencing at all. They find that it makes it all so bizarre when they can become an ogre or become a Vulcan or distort their face so their nose is like the size of a house. Going back to normal, it's no big deal anymore. It's like, strangely enough, you often think of this with teenage girls, that they're very worried about, I think everybody's worried about how they look. And this distorts everything so much that when you go back to normal, it's like, no big, it's like, that's nothing. It's like, it just makes you feel comfortable with the normal way you look.
And once again, I got to stress to our listeners that just discussing it really doesn't do it justice. You really need to go to the Script Software website and go to the Chat FX link, and there they've posted a couple links to a couple video podcasts that Julian's already done. One with, I believe, MacNN, and the other one was, what was the other podcast you'd done, video podcast?
Well, there's another one up there that's a tutorial by two guys in Germany.
Yeah, that's
and
what it was.
They're
yeah.
hilarious because they're speaking, I don't speak German, but when I saw it, I watched the whole thing because they are just having such a great time with this product, showing the blue screen. They actually show you how to use Quartz Composer, too, which I mentioned that this was, Quartz Composer is a product from Apple that's available when you become a developer. And you can become a developer for free. I highly recommend that people try this Quartz Composer out if they have any geek or nerd type inclinations. It is a really fabulous programming language for video processing. It's really interesting. There are a few ways you can get started easily, but it's a really cool thing.
Julian, what was your first Mac, and why did you buy it?
Where did that come from?
Inside the Actor Studio, actually.
I like that show.
So do I.
And that's a good one to emulate. That is a very interesting question. It was a 512K Mac. And I got it for a nonprofit organization I was working for, and we were putting together research on meditation. We were putting together 600 studies on transcendental meditation, and these were the first studies ever put together. You know, prior to that, meditation was thought of as a philosophy or religion or something like that. And then with these studies, scientists saw for the first time that it lowers the breathing and it changed the blood chemistry and the brain waves, and 600 different types of studies in all sorts of biological, chemical, brain waves, psychological, sociological areas. And we were having a really hard time because this was in the age of typesetters. And so I said, why don't we get a computer? And I didn't know much about them at the time, but I'd heard that it could emulate typesetting. And they said, well, we don't have any money, so I went out and I got money from a variety of different people, which is a whole other story in itself we won't go into right now. But they donated money, and we got these two computers, and of course, with the laser printer that came later, we were able to actually emulate the typesetting and speed up the process of typesetting for all these studies. I started working with scientists. The scientists became interested, they all got Macs, etc., etc., and I became the kind of go-to person for all this stuff, which is probably the story for a lot of people out there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, that's kind of how they got started, that, you know, they just started using it, and it was intuitive, and they kind of became the go-to person. Yeah. To wrap it up, I want to ask you kind of a personal question. It's not necessarily a technical question, and we ask a lot of guests this. What does it mean to be a Mac user to you?
Another good question. You know, it's sort of like a cult, actually. It's more than just using a computer. It actually seems to involve a kind of a lifestyle, in a sense, or a choice. We definitely know they're more graphics-oriented. We definitely know they're more artistic. They may even be more... not more musical than other people or more graphics oriented than other people, but they have tendencies in those directions because the Mac is so strong in those areas and strong in video as well. So definitely there's a visual component to it, and I'm a visual type of person. And so I will mention something that's intriguing. We take credit cards, and one of the interesting things that is mentioned to me by the bank that I talk to occasionally, they go, well, if you don't have any credit card fraud, and we go, yeah, it hasn't been an issue, luckily. Well, you know, the PC side and the software vendors over there, it's an enormous problem. It's a constant feature of life. And I see that as kind of sad, you know. It's sort of like the war that's going on right now in on the edge of Lebanon. You know, it's really unfortunate that people try to take shortcuts in life. You know, willing to take life in whatever way, or willing to steal for whatever reason. There's so many ways to be creative. There's so many ways to do things in this world. But it is strange to hear that, you know, there is a difference on the Mac and the Windows side there, and it's the same with viruses as well. And I just want to say something else, and this is because a lot of the other developers are going to be listening, and I don't know how much time you have left, but we didn't get into iStar Composer, which is an amazing program and allows you to add lyrics to downloadable music, and it allows you to show it full screen in the iTunes Visualizer. And it's an extraordinary program, and it's just going through another upgrade, and I highly recommend people try that. And they try iKey, which is a macro tool, which can save you thousands of keystrokes every day. Very easy to use, very cheap. And CopyPaste, of course, which I mentioned, which is a multiple clipboard tool which has been around forever and is beloved by anybody who's ever used the clipboard.
Julian Miller, we would like to thank you for being on our podcast. We want to also thank the other contributing editors of the My Mac Mini podcast for making a lot of bit of room on the secondary podcast at MyMac.com for Chad and I, since we went over on the other show. Julian, we want to open this invitation to you to come back on the show sometime and talk more about your applications, but more to talk to you. We think you're a fascinating person. Your outlook is great, and obviously we've got a lot in common, and we think you would have a lot of fun on our show. Yeah. And we definitely had a lot of fun having you on today. Definitely. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Julian.
It was the same for me. It was very smooth and pleasurable and very interesting. Thank you.
Smooth and pleasurable. He's definitely not talking about me, Chad.
Both of you.
You're listening to The Dashboard Minute here on the My Mac Mini Podcast. Hi guys, welcome to the Dashboard Minute. Some news I need to get out first. This will be the last regularly scheduled Dashboard Minute with new widgets. The reasons why are mostly because there are fewer and fewer truly original widgets being created. I suppose I could keep going and give you the latest internet search widget, but what would be the point? You've heard it before. However, before I let the Dashboard Minute fade away, I'm going to spend the next five shows after this one, leading up to the Dashboard Minute Show 50, giving you what I consider to be the best widgets as I have reviewed them since last year. Thanks to everyone who has supported the show and sent me feedback. For anyone who might be interested in showing their more creative side, I'm putting out a call for the music needed for the opening and closing themes for the very last show. They need to be no more than 20 to 30 seconds in length, and in the oral part state that this is the Dashboard Minute with Guy Searle on the MyMac.com mini podcast. Other than that, go crazy and have fun with it. There are no prizes that I know of for the winning theme song unless Tim comes up with something, but the first place composer will get their name mentioned along with whatever links they might want to advertise. Everyone who sends something in will be mentioned as well, and if it's really creative, I'll play their compositions too. Now, just because I'm dropping the Dashboard Minute doesn't mean I'm getting out of the segment biz. There's another project that I'll be working on that I'll tell you about another time. Keep an eye on the MyMac.com site for more information. Okay, on to the widgets and widget news. Some time ago, I talked about a company that created software that allowed you to use dashboard widgets outside of the dashboard environment. It was called the Amnesty Widget Browser, and it was created by Mesa Dynamics. It also allowed OS X Panther users who have upgraded to at least 10.3.9, as well as Tiger users, to use dashboard widgets within the program started in your Mac Finder. Once you started Amnesty, it had a drop-down menu in the Finder bar that had all of your widgets listed. Simply select the widget from that menu, and you could use it without having to go to dashboard. Unfortunately, there were some compatibility issues with the program, as not all widgets played nice. Now, Mesodynamics has taken the next step and created a way for your individual widgets to be standalone programs outside of dashboard. It's called Amnesty Singles, and it costs $9.95 and can be found at the Mesodynamics website. It's a universal binary but won't convert widgets that have not made the switch, so check your widget maker to make sure that any widgets you want to use have also been converted. The one widget I want to talk about today comes from Break.com. Well, actually not from Break.com, but it plays content in from Break.com. And it is a dashboard video player that pulls down content from their site. Many of the videos are of a more adult nature, mostly because of violence or language. So while there doesn't seem to be any hardcore nudity, it would probably be a good idea to keep your kids away from this one. Nicely put together, though, and you'll need a pretty fast internet connection to keep up with the video stream. Over a wireless connection, at times it was almost unviewable. Find the Break.com widget at dashboardwidgets.com. This is the moment when I ask for really cool widgets, but unless it really blows me away, I think we're about through. Convince me that your favorite widget is worth talking about, and I'll reconsider. I can be contacted via email at dvminute@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time for the best widget countdown on the Dashboard Minute on the My Mac Mini Podcast.
And that wraps up the My Mac Mini Podcast number 2. Thanks for listening.